you have to have a full understanding of the full process, from like putting your first word down to putting your last word down. Doesn't matter if it's good, doesn't matter if it's bad, doesn't matter if you cried while you did it. It just, like, you need to know how to finish it. You need to know the process of, like, here is how I paced the entire book, here's the time that it physically took me to finish it, here's the habits that I used for it. And once you reach the end of it, you can say, like, yeah, I can do that again, or here's what I learned, or no, I'm done with this forever. So that's the most valuable lesson you can get.
This is the Crit RPG Podcast, your one-stop shop for everything Lit RPG, Progression Fantasy, and Royal Road.
Hi everyone, and welcome to the Crit RPG Podcast, the only podcast where the guest has to coach the host in how to pronounce his last name. With me today is Luke Chmielenko. I almost got it. Chmielenko. Oh my god. I'm fucking this up now because I'm like I'm on fire. Chmielenko.
There we go. Lovely.
Wonderful. Okay, great. I did that. I survived. How are you doing?
Good. I'm having a wonderful day. How's your day going over there?
Pretty good, yeah. Went to the hardware store, organized an entire company. It was great.
Yeah. All the adulting.
Very much.
Yeah.
So without further ado, before the YouTube recording started, we already like talked for about 20 minutes about co-writing and your writing process and how to get into the zone, or how you get into the zone, we didn't talk about exactly how you outline yet. And that's something I still want to talk about after the show, but let's just jump right into it. Which story do you want to talk about first?
Well, I mean, I have the big new one. I mean, we have Ascend Online. That's the most present thing going on. We have the newest entry in the series. We have some wiggles with the series because I know it's not up in the same way that we expect it to be. So we can start anyway there.
Wherever you want.
So, okay, I guess biggest thing about, I guess we're getting about 10 days ago, we had Ascend Online 5 came out. That is, Threads of Fate. It came only on audio and physical print. And that is because the ebook is still over on Yonder. I don't know how many of you have been following, but I guess it's about 2 years ago now, a whole crop of us Lit RPG authors got approached by Yonder, which is a subsidiary of Webtoon and all the fun companies over there. And they were essentially trying to create a platform that essentially mimicked Webtoon, except for like written work. I've lost count already on how many different titles and authors were chosen, but like dozens and dozens of us were all approached at the same time. We submitted stories. Some of us, in my case, I submitted existing stories to their platform for a short stint of exclusivity, which was why Threads of Fate will be exclusive there for a little bit longer. And other people wrote brand new stories just trying to get on there. I mean, their biggest thing was to have a bit more of an international audience, especially over in the Eastern markets, which we met with a middling amount of success. I mean, some people were more successful than others as things go. And that's fast forwarding to now. That's unfortunately why Ascend Online is exclusive over there for a little while. If you want to read Threads of Fate, you can absolutely find it there for the next little while. But we are going to be moving back to Kindle as soon as the rights come back. That shouldn't be too much longer. I don't know whether that's on the order of months or a year or so. That just depends on how the exit part of the contracts work out. There's a bunch of moving pieces to that because I'm sure, as everyone knows, Yonder didn't quite take off the way that it we might have otherwise hoped. So they're in the process of kind of just winding down. I've heard that a couple of contracts got canceled and are kind of just, what do you call it, packing and shop. So it's just a waiting game. I mean, we'll get our rights back eventually. We will move back over onto Kindle and have all of the fun back there on the process. But we just have to be patient. I mean, it's going to be a super fun story once it's there. And I mean, even if you do want to read it on Yonder, you can technically read the entire story for free if you're patient enough. You just need to do the daily unlocks and you can read it. I mean, it's a little frustrating that you have to wait, but free is also worth the wait. So it just really depends on what your way of consuming the story is.
So my takeaway there is you're over Yonder.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Absolutely. Yeah. It was a good try. I mean, we can talk at length. I'm sure a lot of people have talked about the length of how Amazon's monopoly is, and it's always interesting to see a company try something new and actually put a meaningful of money behind it. That's why a lot of authors have really successful Patreons. That's why a lot of them sell direct. I'm sure like most readers have heard of the weird things that Amazon has done to us in terms of like page reads and doing other stuff like that to make our life, author life, more difficult. So there's always a lot of people, even especially like myself, we're always willing to try something new if we feel there's value there, because in the end of the day, we want to continue writing. I mean, that's a big point, but I mean at the same time is we also want to just make it easier to get our stuff, especially to people who don't know that it exists. I mean, as big as Amazon is, it's still a closed market to the Eastern audiences and people that originally inspired like Literpg and Progression Fantasy. So I mean, like getting in front of them is would be absolutely amazing. You know what I mean? It's just as big as the audience is here, it's just as big, if not bigger, overseas. So it's just kind of figuring out how to get there.
I mean, who knows? Like maybe like machine translated Luke Shmelenko books are like all the rage over there right now. Like
who knows? Yeah. We have no way of finding out, right? So
But I mean, like in the end, if you were gonna start a startup and approach the angel investors and go like, hey, my entire business is 100% reliant on Amazon staying up, they would be like, watch something else.
Yeah, so, that's tough. Yeah, 100%. So I mean, like I said, we all tried something new, and it may have not panned out, but we tried. That's all I can say. We tried, and we're gonna go back to what we know works. Yeah.
In a yonderous pace. I actually wanted to ask you also about your evil origin story, right? So I mean, I've heard many of them before. But I still find that everyone kind of has like their own little reason why they started writing, even though they fall into two broad categories. But I'm going to tell you the categories after.
Okay.
After you've told me a story.
Right. So like with any good story, I got bored. Really, that's just the only thing. It's the only really way I can describe it. So before I was a writer, I used to work in IT security. More to the point, I also worked a lot of odd shifts just because at the time I was working for the government, and I eventually transitioned to working for a college. So I mean, there was a lot of lifestyle changes involved during that transition. But basically, I had a lot of spare time on my hands. I had quite a bit of a distance to commute. I had quite a bit of distance of just like depending where I was going and what I was doing, just to have free time and to be alone with my thoughts. So combining that with the fact that, the early Literpg books started coming out, I read everything. And I mean, a lot of it was not great. And then a lot of it also was really inspiring. I mean, you got a chance to really see like what kind of ideas people were trying to execute and how they went about executing them. And after I'd read enough, I was realizing that I wasn't really finding what I wanted to read. There was only like a handful of authors that were telling the kind of stories that I wanted to read and that I was interested in. A lot of them went off the rails from my perspective. I mean, it's just not what I was interested in reading. And so I tried. I mean, I tried it on my own hand. I didn't really know what I was doing. I just started kind of doing it in my spare time whenever I happened to have that. And I can't remember. I think I ended up writing about 15 chapters of Ascend Online over the course of like almost a year or so. So I mean, like I was not at all like super, diligent about it. And then I kind of hit a point where it's like, I'm just really not sure how, if I want to continue this, where am I going with my time and my life, so to speak. So I posted up for free on Railroad, and I think I dumped all 15 chapters at once way back in the day. And I think within like 2 weeks or something like that, I had myself 1,500 followers. It would have been early 2016. So that was like, that was pretty good back then. Mm-hmm. And I just got a really good, really good and positive response. I mean, I doubled down at that point and I finished the book by October. Pretty sure it was October of that year, and then I published Ascend Online 1 then. And to make things more stressful for me in the moment, the book did well. Everybody continued liking it. There still weren't that many books out there in the world, so at that point, I mean, I devoted a lot more time to it. I mean, now that I had the first book finished, I kind of knew what I was doing in the sense of then, and then I basically wrote the next three books like back to back to back. And once I hit Legacy of the Fallen, everything truly took off. I mean, it was such an order of magnitude difference in terms of sales and how my life was going and what kind of expectations I had for where I was going with my regular everyday career versus what I wanted to do with my writing. And it honestly made sense just to jump and focus more on writing. Like my wife was super supportive. She gave me every opportunity to succeed and to do that. And really, after that, like the rest is history. I mean, we've written, I think I have 22 books written now. I'm not even sure anymore how many have been published versus how many are still coming. But that's kind of bonkers, right? So, I mean, I know there's a split between co-writes and solo writes, but that's still a lot of energy and time and mental focus that's gone into all of them. So it's I don't know. It's been a long journey. So yeah, here I am.
I mean, like, when did you say 2016?
Yeah. 2016. Yeah. Almost 10 years. Almost 10 years.
You are the grandfather of the RPG. There we go.
Right.
But I mean, it's kind of like kind of insane. Like, if we're thinking about this, that in fact, like, 10 years isn't all that long in, you know, the span of the human existence. But to us in RPGs, it seems like eons.
Right? Oh, yeah.
Because the genre is that new.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think, I mean, I'm not even sure. I think I would say, like, probably, like, I maybe caught reading the first new books, like, maybe 2014, 2015-ish or whatever, by the time they came over, like, this way into, like, North America. So, I mean, I wasn't too dialed in. I think before I started reading lit RPG, I was really into like military sci-fi, a lot of the older fantasy and stuff like that. So, I mean, I was just wasn't reading those kind of books if they were out earlier, right? And, I mean, I tripped over them because I'd literally read everything on Amazon and I needed to find something new.
I stumbled into it because I needed a really long, really long audiobook. So yeah, there you go.
That's the way it goes. Right. Yep.
That's how they get you. Oh, look, what's that? He fights with monsters. Like, oh wow, that's like a very long audiobook.
Oh yeah,
yeah. No, I totally get it. Some of the forerunners there were like sufficiently advanced magic, right?
Mm-hmm.
The opening moves, like books that were lit RPG before anyone even knew what lit RPG was.
Yep.
Which is kind of interesting. Yeah. So.
Yep.
Okay, so since then, of course, like you've written like a crap ton of books, right? And you were talking about three different books that you're writing right now, and one of them was Ascend Online still.
Yep. So I'm planning out Ascend Online 6 that I'm working on. It's still going to be a bit of time. I'm just I haven't put my full priority to it. The other two books that I'm writing right now, they're both book ones of a new series. So the first one is called Starbreaker. That's going to be a space fantasy progression series. Depending on how much people have read, I would say it's kind of like a mix of like the old traditional Spelljammer of like Dungeons and Dragons, mixed in with like Glenn Stewart's Starship Mage. I was one of the first readers for Starship Mage. I absolutely loved it. It was one of the books that got me into just like reading military sci-fi in general. So I mean, I was late to that show, but I absolutely loved it, and I've had this idea burning at the back of my mind for years now, easily since before I started writing. And I've wanted to try my hand at a nice universe where magic is kind of linked with technology, right? I mean, it's the best way I can describe it is like, what if our traditional fantasy society just kept living and advancing and stuff, so eventually they would, I hope they would mirror what we expect for our lives. Magic makes everyone's life easier. You have, you know, spaceships, you can go from star to star, and then, you know, adventure happens, right? So I'm doing that one, and then the other project I'm working on for quite some time now, it's been rebooted a couple times, is Sign of Magic. This is the best way I can describe this, honestly, is that it is my vision or take on what I kind of hope Primal Hunter Defiance of the Fall would be for a lot of people. It's just going to be a nice slow story on what happens to our main character. Like, our main character, it's like a regression story. Our main character was somebody in his past life, and then he finds out that he's been reborn into a new body, a new life, 1,000 years later. And of course, it's just going to be him piecing his life together. It's going to be, you know, I'm hoping to strike a balance between it being like reasonably slow so that you can see his day-to-day life, and then, but also reasonably quick that you can actually see the goal of the series and the end of the series. I have too much to do to have essentially an endless series in mind, but I'm hoping it'll be fun. There's a lot of stuff that I'm trying to put into it that I've seen in games and stuff that I played. Oh, bless you. I like to lean. I mean, in the past, I was a huge Final Fantasy XIV fan. I loved a lot of the stuff in there, and I'm actually surprised I've only seen a mixed amount of like inspiration in the books that I've read. There's some books that have really leaned into the kind of Final Fantasy inspiration, and then there's just a lot that I really haven't seen. I mean, I have stuff at the back of my head that I really enjoyed and like. So that's what Sign of Magic is going to be. That one is probably going to take a while to come out. I don't know how, hopefully this year, but I'm thinking I'll probably have one book of Starbreaker finished. I'm trying to make it comply with editing and stuff like that. So I hope to serialize it on my website and Railroad and Patreon soon-ish. I don't know. I need to figure out how the timeline is going to work out in terms of book one and book two, because I'm solely started on book two, and I'm hoping to get enough content that everybody can enjoy it, and that hopefully people will have a reason to come and join me on Patreon for it. The same thing goes with Sign of Magic. I hope to serialize Sign of Magic for free as well on my website and get things going as well. But I'm expecting Sign of Magic to be my backup project. So if people want to know what to expect from me, it's going to be a lot of Starbreaker that's going to be going. And then we're just going to have a mishmash of Sign of Magic and Ascend Online in the background, because those books are a bit more heavy lifting in terms of mental writing and just size. I mean, Starbreaker is going to be a bit more bite-sized to read, not the big sprawling, you know, 200,000 word crunch novels that you've gotten from me in the past, but the other ones will be. Sign of Magic I expect to be long, and Ascend Online I expect to be long, so those just naturally take a lot much more time to cook in a quality that people actually want to read.
I kind of have been wondering about your process there, but before that, I have to make another pun.
Yes.
Brace yourself. So people, you're saying that people can subscribe to your Patreon for early signs of magic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, good. Thanks. God, these just start getting worse. I should make more of them to kind of see if I can maybe find more quality.
Why not?
Yeah. And I want to give a shout out to everyone who's on my Discord. You know you love it.
Yep.
Anyway. Yeah, because like I had a bit of an uprising on my Discord. People were lying and they were joking that they didn't think my puns were funny, and I had to stand down on that shit.
Yep, establish order. Reestablish order. Yep.
No, I'm kidding. It was great dudes over there. Okay. So tell me more about your serialization process, because I still don't have a Patreon for my story because I just take forever to write my own book, and I kind of want it finished first and then kind of serialize it, you know?
Yep. No, I would agree with that. So, I mean, this will be a bit of a ramble, but so like I said, when I started off Ascend Online, I serialized it. I tend to deliver it. I like to deliver stuff in chunks rather than doing like the typical chapter format because I was still writing it at the time. So, I mean, I wasn't maybe as polished as I am now in terms of writing because I would always go back, you know what I mean? I would be like, okay, write 3 chapters. Okay, well, I need to put something back, you know, in the first chapter so that the third chapter finally makes sense. And in terms of structure, so that's that was different back then in terms of how I structured my writing, and that's why I did it in chunks then. But since then, I mean, I serialized a really good chunk of Hell to Pay, and I serialized a good chunk of Threads of Fate and Glory to the Brave on my Patreon, and then life got busy. I wasn't able to really keep up with that in a meaningful way once I had kids and we hit COVID. That was just absolute chaos in terms of what my writing schedule was. So there's no way that I could manage that, right? So, but now that we're on the other side of it, and especially since when I originally wrote Threads of Fate, all of Threads of Fate was written as a web serial on Yonder. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I would basically deliver 3 chapters a week, and we steadily put the chapters out, and sometimes, I mean, there was only a week delay between chapters, right? So, I mean, I would finish a chapter like the previous week, and it would go up the next week, and I actually found myself, I enjoyed that process. I mean, I enjoyed the process of having the accountability to get the work done, and I enjoyed just seeing what readers thought about it that followed me there, right? So, I mean, that just, it felt good. I really enjoyed having that kind of process because it just inspired me to write better. I noticed that my output was a lot higher. I will notice that I wasn't hemming and hawing over stuff. It felt good. So I just started thinking about that in terms of like how I could do that again. And I mean, I won't lie. I mean, seeing the success that people have had on the Patreon now in like the new age of Patreon, and also what I had in the past. I mean, I love my Patreon to death, and it kind of pained me that I had to take a step away from it. So like I just enjoy being able to kind of write that way, and also just be a little less dependent on Amazon, because again, Amazon, is great for allowing us to do what we want to do, but having a bit more of a safety net and being able to do more experimental stuff that you just have a bit more flexibility to just try something new without needing to be like, oh, well, it just has to be like, you know, super commercial, you know what I mean? So don't necessarily want to try to clone any other existing book, but if you have that flexibility to say like, okay, well, people kind of liked this part of the story, they didn't like that part of the story, or this part wasn't executed well, kind of gives you an opportunity to take a bit more risks and adapt if something is truly, truly not working. You know what I mean? Kind of like beta testing your book to some extent. So it just feels appealing. I mean, I just enjoyed the whole process of it. It just feels, where I want to be with my writing right now. And I'm hoping everybody enjoys what I have coming up.
Yeah. I mean, in general, I think the idea of providing people the opportunity to give you early feedback on your story is very nice. And I've been thinking about lots of like different ways of how to make this work for myself, right? There's a couple of ways where this could work if you're an outliner. For example, you might want to write book one of your story and then serialize it like at a sustainable pace, write book two at the same time. And then when you are done releasing book two, you go back and edit book one, put that back up, and then we're done with that, like edit book two, and then put that back up and write book three at the time, and so on and so forth. And then you always alternate between editing a book and writing a book. Yep. That could kind of work, but I don't know how people would like that on Railroad, on Patreon. Because in the end, you are reading the same story a couple of times, right? So
yeah, you are. I think it depends on the sense of scale that you have. And I mean, I see a lot of authors have different strategies and different plans. I mean, I'm a huge fan of Beware of Chicken, and I know that Casual Farmer, he takes time off. When he hits the volume, he's like, all right, I'm going to be gone for a month, and I'm going to be editing volume, whatever. You know what I mean? And I absolutely respect that. I mean, I know the process it takes to do the writing. I know how sometimes when you're doing something, you know, you're delivering 3 chapters a week or however many chapters a week, that getting them done is sometimes more important necessarily than what do you call it, sometimes making sure that everything lines up. But I mean, that's just the nature of serial writing. I mean, I know that some people might take offense to that, but there's nothing wrong with going back and tweaking things. There's nothing wrong with giving things a polish. I mean, especially when you're catering to different audiences, like what people would accept in a serial mindset is very different than what people would accept in an Amazon mindset. Like, it's entirely different readerships. Like, you could sink as a serial and absolutely crush it as an Amazon release, or even the reverse, right? There's just I think that's just good business sense to take a look at what you're writing and make sure that you know what audience you're shooting for. But in the end of the day, like, you do have to get the work done. So I mean, I think that just if you do one and then the other, that makes absolutely perfect sense to me.
Yeah, the entire idea of figuring that out is daunting, right? You kind of need to, like, have a lot of trial and error, and you might lose some people. But I think, as with anything with writing and publishing, especially in a serial space, being consistent is key.
Yep, 100%. Being consistent is key, and we also enjoy, like, depending on the model you choose to follow, I mean, the barrier for entry is really low. So, I mean, that's you posting your stuff for free, you put in what energy you can, and I feel it's really good to get people to look at your stuff that might otherwise never do it. I mean, that's why I run free sales on my books on Amazon. That's why I try to just encourage whatever feedback I can. And I feel like the easier you can make it for people to just give you a shot, the bigger that you, the more likely you can. I mean, maybe there's something unappealing about your cover that, like, someone would be like, nah, I don't like that cover, so I'm never read the book. But they're like, oh, for free, you know, you know what I mean? Like, oh, that's different. They actually read the content of it. They're like, yes, this is exactly what I was looking for. And there was a cover that put me off. You know what I mean? So, I mean, I've had stories like that where I look at the cover and I'm like, I don't know if the story is going to be for me. And I'm I put it off. And then I actually cracked the book open. And I'm like, oh, wait, no, this is great. There's just a cover that missed, you know what I mean? And then once you get deeper into the series, you're like, oh, I can see, you know, why they chose that kind of cover. It makes a bit more sense for it. So, I mean, like, that's just the nature of the business. That's the nature of self-publishing. Is you make it, the more easier you can make it for people to get into your work and just try you out, you have no idea who you're going to catch.
I've been thinking about how to market Torchbearer. Because it's quite obvious it's not a Royal Road story in per se, right? It's very much a story of, I was asking, in my desperation, I asked ChatGPT, like, hey, look, like, what's a typical male power fantasy? Because it was just so lost, right? And I read, and I was like, yeah, some of these things I do, some of them I don't. I'm like, what's a typical female power fantasy? And it, like, goes through all the things. I'm like, oh, damn it. That's why I was writing a female power fantasy. You know, lots of, like, overcoming your own emotions and kind of connecting with society and, like, that kind of stuff. So I'm thinking about actually doing trad, right? I've reached out to some trad editors to give it a once over, and we'll see what comes out of it.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Have you ever considered? Sorry.
Oh, you lose nothing by trying.
Yeah. Have you ever considered, like, how we can, as authors, bridge that gap towards the more traditional markets more? Because, like, we have, like, a huge niche, and I think every time a new, a huge new book releases, there's, like, more of an influx of people who, like, post on Facebook, like, I read, like, Dungeon Crawler Carl. What else is there like Dungeon Crawler Carl? Which is, like, the most asked question on Facebook, I think.
I feel like it's a tough question because, I mean, I change my opinion on it quite a bit. So I say my general perspective, and I'll say this is, like, riddled with exceptions, is that I don't think that there is a wider market. Like, I think that the people who are aware of Lit RPG and would read, like, you know, really in-depth, like, Lit RPG stuff is small and will kind of remain small. And I'll say that just because of the burden of knowledge, you know what I mean? Like, if you look at the people who are playing MMOs, you know, they look at the people who are looking for that kind of stuff, it's on a downswing, you know what I mean? Like, we don't have those record numbers of, like, people who are playing, you know, 10 million people playing World of Warcraft anymore. We don't have that kind of push. And people who do have that push are older. I mean, they're my age. They're older than my age, right? They're the people who grew up on EverQuest. They're the people who grew that. They're in different stages of their lives. And so I'll say, with the exception, I would say, like, that then moving forward a step from that, let's say the reason why Dungeon Crawler Carl is from my perspective, is successful is because it's not one of those old stories. It's the new story where there's a lot more human emotion, there's a lot more human connection. The game is much more of a backdrop. I mean, like, if you were to take Dungeon Crawler Carl and release it in 2016, I think people would like it, but be like, well, this isn't really lit RPG. They would say, like, this isn't as crunchy as, you know, The Land. This isn't as crunchy as Ascend Online or Awaken Online. This isn't what we would, you know, it's not the same as any of D. Russ's books, right? So I think it just depends on, like, what audience you're looking for. I think that if you're going much more into what a trad audience was like, I think Dungeon Crawler Carl really hits the spot because it is the game is the backdrop. It's really, you know, a Hunger Games style game, lots of emotions, lots of interest, really, really strong characterization for it. But the gamey elements are very much in the background, the same way Ready Player One is. I mean,
you know what time it is? That's right. It's a new ad. And this time I have two amazing stories for you to check out. First one is my friend Saving Throw, who writes a story called So When Am I a Hero? It's a system apocalypse that is quite frankly amazing. I don't like system apocalypses usually, and I devoured that one, so go and check it out. There's a link below the podcast. The second one is from another friend of mine, because I have two friends, called The Infinity Dungeon by Reject Humanity. Premise is actually pretty cool. Guy goes hiking on the Appalachian trails and stumbles into the only and first dungeon in the world, and he's the only person on Earth with a system, at least for a while. All right, go check him out. I appreciate it a lot, and I'll see you next time.
Ready Player One has strong characterization. They have a very clear goal in what they want to do for the game. The game is really just the backdrop for it, right? So that said, I think there is still opportunity in it. Again, to use exactly Dungeon Crawler Carl as an example, I think the opportunity is in physical stuff, in physical books. I mean, I'm sure you all seen that, you know, Matt has signed a deal for the physical books to be like rebranded, and he's selling the new copies of the books. I think that's where the trad strength is right now. I mean, like, that they can get the books in the store, they know how to market the books, they know how to make people want to buy them. I would be hard pressed to say that I don't think really any sort of trad publisher could do a better job than someone like Aethon, or like someone like Podium or Audible or something like that, to produce your books. You know what I mean? Like, it's just these other places, they have so much institutional knowledge and experience and expectation. I just don't know what they would do that we can't already do ourselves, or these, you know, super dialed in publishers could do better. I mean, I just don't. I mean, you can look at the obvious examples, like He Who Fights with Monsters crushes it at number one. They just do. They just, it shows up and it hits number one in the store. I don't think that if it was, you know, published by, you know, Penguin or anything like that, they would just hit number one on the store on its own merits. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't matter. There's no secret sauce I think that an outside publisher could give it. You know what I mean? So it's just, I don't know. I feel like setting expectations, like, Trad would have to kind of, you know, be willing to accept, you know, only print rights for certain novels. They would have to give much better terms, or you would need to have like a very, like, you know, edge case kind of book, like Dungeon Crawler Carl, where it does something really different. It's like it tastes the same for us, but it's something appealing for the wider audience, right? So it's a very, very hard niche to hit, and I think it just really depends on, like, what the expectations of the book are, like what audience is the book really catering to, what notes are the book trying to hit in general. So I know it's like it's hard, like I say, like, I don't, unless you have those true breakout books, like, I just really don't know how that would work out.
The bigger question is obviously, do we even want to enter the bigger market, right? Because that's kind of like what you were dancing around. Because, like, if it right now really works, we have a readership, it's ravenous, good books in our space will always succeed still. So why do we want to, like, play in the bigger pool, with, like, all the different, like, shark variants?
Well, it's tough because it's a bigger pool in terms of what the stage could be. Because you would honestly just have more scrutiny on yourself, right? I mean, if you're being pushed by a bigger publisher, then, you know, they would just get you in front of more people. Which could be incredibly valuable, right? But I mean, it's the idea of what you're giving up to get there. If you're going on a bigger publisher and you're like, here is my print book, here's a hardcover and nice cover, you know what I mean, stuff like that, and you can get in front of a lot of people, that would be great. I think that's where trad's strength is. For my perspective, it's what you give up to get there. You know what I mean? So it's like you're giving up the ebook rights. You know what I mean? You're giving up the audiobook rights, which for, I would say again, for a successful author like me, that's really high price tag. You know what I mean? Like we're probably well into the seven figures there. I feel like people like, you know, Matt, like, you know, like Will White, anyone, you know, Defiance of the Fall, anyone, we're talking like seven figures. We're talking well into seven figures. And that's not something realistic that I feel trad would spend. I mean, I've seen, I know they can spend it. I know people that have gotten fantastic contracts and stuff like that. But I don't feel that they would do that. Like, this is maybe like, you know, a bit more feely craft, you know, now on my part. This is what my gut assumption says based on what I'm seeing. Maybe it's wrong. I know there's always an exception to the rule, but it's just like, in terms of what you would give up as a self-publisher to go all in for trad, specifically for LitRPG, and like, I don't think it's quite there yet. Just like, honestly, like, go like look at what Mountain Dale Press is doing, look what Atheon is doing. They actually can, if you're going to give up all your rights, like, I'm pretty sure that they will do a better job than a traditional publisher does. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So it's just about saying, if you're going to go to the next level, I think what Matt did with Dungeon Crawler Carl, just only selling print rights, like, that's, you know, that's a big brain move. I mean, that they're the ones that can take that specific format to the next level. So again, this is like, maybe this is too much of an author point of view, you know what I mean, on what you're kind of getting, right? But I think, like, in terms of like, what are you getting versus what are you giving up kind of thing.
So I've actually gone on Reddit, and I've gone to Pup Tips, a subreddit where people talk about like, hey, submitting my manuscript to agents, and this is what it looks like. And I've been reading the threads, and I've gone like, what are these people doing? Right. Because like, oh, I've been waiting 6 months for a response from an agent. Do you guys still think I'm going to get one? And people are like, yeah, no worries. Like, something's going to take 2 years. And I'm like, what are you doing, brother?
Yeah. Right?
And then I went in there. I was like, hey, look, I have a question. Like, why do you do this to yourself? Right. So why don't you just like self-pub? And lots of the answers were like really easy. They were like, I don't want to bother with it. And I think that's one thing that I'm going to do soon, is I'm going to like talk to Melisdy, for example, who wrote an amazing guide, talk to Think Twice, and maybe like, I don't know, like a publisher and an agent or something, and talk about how freaking easy it is to like self-publish your own book. You don't actually need a publisher. But that being said, publishers do provide a good service. If you don't want the hassle of like doing all the promo, getting the cover done right, and you know, handling different artists and all nailing them together and like tying it all up, then the publisher is definitely worth the money for sure.
Yep. Hey, I think it's the point. When you're at that point, I think it's the best thing you can do if you're an author. Is take an assessment of what your strengths are and how much you're willing to do if you want to write. And I just say, like, if you purely want to write, then yeah, finding a publisher to handle all those nuts and bolts on you will serve you well. I mean, you're going to give up a slice of your earnings, but the trade-off is that you probably won't put work out. I mean, that's the thing. Yeah. You'll just write for the sake of writing, and that's a wonderful place to be. Like, don't get me wrong, but wonderful place to be. I thought that was going to be my life until it wasn't. And then the other authors are the ones that where you love the business of writing, you love the business of self-publishing. At that point, depending on how far you go, you really end up acting as your own mini publisher. So I mean, like, you have a lot of skill sets that you learn that are adjacent to the act of writing. Like you said, you learn about cover formatting, you learn about, you know, interior formatting, you learn about, you know, literally just cold, like, searching and cold messaging people with skills that you need. You know what I mean? You'll find somebody like, you know, so-and-so does interior formatting. You have to find somebody that does need for interior formatting, or you need to learn how to do interior formatting. And like, depending on what your job and career is, like that is going to be a completely different skill set. That's going to be, you know, 20, 30, you know, 40 hours of your life being like, how do I format a page so it doesn't suck? You know what I mean? That's going to be, you know, a basic formatting kind of thing, right? So, I mean, you're essentially starting like a whole business for it. So, I mean, that depends, that like you have to be honest with your mindset of like, do I want to do this? And like, or do I have time to do this?
As an author, and I think maybe we need to move over to like the next segment, but I think as an author, I don't think it actually is factually this way. You are a B2B business. You are selling your product to another business that then sells it somewhere else. Yep. Even if it's self-publishing, then you're selling it to Amazon, who's a business. And even if you weren't self-publishing, the only way you're like directly selling to a customer is if you sell the book on your own website and people buy it over there. So and I think that's like minuscule, but or like Kickstarter maybe, I guess, but whatever. What's the best advice you've ever gotten as a writer?
Finish something.
Good. Thanks. Next question.
Love it.
No, this I love this answer because I have a friend who I always kind of wink at when someone says this, because they've started like 4 stories since we met like last year. And I'm like, dude, these are all amazing. Just finish one. And they're like, no, it's not perfect. I don't like it. Like it's, I don't know. Like, I always respect that, right? You shouldn't force yourself to write something if you don't need to. But finishing a book taught me more about writing a book than writing a book ever did.
Yep. 100%. I mean, you have to have a full understanding of the full process from like putting your first word down to putting your last word down. Doesn't matter if it's good. Doesn't matter if it's bad. Doesn't matter if you cried while you did it. It just like, you need to know how to finish it. You need to know the process of like, here is how I paced the entire book. Here's the time that it physically took me to finish it. Here's the habits that I used for it. And once you reach the end of it, you can say like, yeah, I can do that again, or here's what I learned, or no, I'm done with this forever. So that's the most valuable lesson you can get, because like, starting a shiny project is always going to be nice. Like you're always going to feel good. Like, oh, I have all these ideas. I got vibes. I got everything. I'm like, that's a fantastic place. That's a fantastic place to be. That's why I love starting a new project. You know what I mean? But like that rush of like conceptualizing and starting stuff, like it's really like 5% of your work. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, you're going to be like, oh, I have this idea. Like, all right. So then, you know, expand out the idea a little bit more. And then it's like, okay, well, you know, here's the plot. Okay. That's a little bit more. And then eventually gets to the point where you need to execute it. And you're like, well, you know, why did I decide to have, you know, like all this, you know, stupid widgets in my story? You know what I mean? Now I got to carry, and it was a good idea when I started, but actually like, you know, making sure that, you know, you have 20 different like character casts that need to be in one scene. You're like, oh my god, I don't like this. Then you start killing your characters off, and then, you know, and then people start
like that
complaining, and then or, you know, or just people, like some people just like suddenly start, you know, not existing, right? You're like, well, these 3 characters are now going to be one character, because I don't want to, you know, this game character has walked into the room 3 times, and you know what I mean, like just like it gets really frustrating to like wield actually execute the story. So yeah, no, like learning how to finish a story, learning how to get the other side of it is most critical thing you can do, because that will tell you whether or not you actually want to do it again.
Yeah. And also, on top of that, it teaches you how to fall in love with the process. Mm-hmm. Because finishing, like finishing for all it's worth, feels great for like 5 minutes. Everything. This is the worst documentary about like stamp collectors, like some stamp collector like collected some amazing stamp, and it's like, this was great, and I put it in my album and I never looked at it again.
Yep.
Because the hunt is what's fun, right? The looking for it, the wanting something. And writing can be the same thing. If you don't focus on like detaching yourself from the outcome, right? Falling in love with the process is such a fucking good tool, pardon my French. But I don't want to make any like declarative statements here, but if I were to like lean myself out the window so far that my feet dangle off the floor, I would say that you can be a successful author if you don't love the process of writing itself, and that is like sitting your ass in a chair and typing.
I mean, you have
thanks
to,
for coming to my TED Talk.
You have to. Yeah. I mean, like you really have to. I mean, you can, if not, you're going to get into mental health issues. You're going to get into burnout. You have to love writing. And I mean, it's fine if you don't love writing for a particular period of time, because I've been there. Mm. Like sometimes you get yourself too wrapped up in a story. But I mean, you have to be honest with what your goals are. You have to be honest with what you want out of writing. And then you actually have to do it. I mean, you have to figure it out. I mean, that's useless advice, but it's also the best advice I can give you, is like, you have to do it at the end of the day.
And I want to add something there, and that is, please don't think Maddox told me I don't enjoy writing, so I shouldn't be a writer. No, like everything else in life, this is something you can learn. Like I friggin' hated writing, right? And then until I didn't, if you somehow manage to like get into a flow state, and we talked about this before the podcast began in the Patreon stuff. Just, I don't know, put on headphones, put like some like lo-fi on repeat or whatever, like whatever you need to do to get into the flow state and enjoy that, right? And really enjoy that. It's the same feeling that some people get like while they're like mountain biking or riding, I don't know, driving a car.
Yep.
Like whatever you need to do to get to that state. And yeah, like don't write because when you're successful, be successful because you love writing.
Yep, you got to write from a place of passion.
Yes. Speaking of fruit, and kind of like learning something new, is there one thing that you would go back to and change in earlier works, or is there something that you learned and now completely do differently?
I don't know. I mean, I try not to look back simply because it's the sheer quantity of stuff that I have. Like it's, I mean, again, it's going to be a bit more of a mercenary perspective, or even just like a money perspective, but like going backwards and re-editing stuff that you've already put out really generally doesn't serve you. I say maybe there are exceptions where that's true or something like that, but at the end of the day, like it becomes a question of luxury. Like, if you're making something for the sake of making art, sure. Absolutely, do whatever you want. It's no problem. Again, there's no, when you have the proper approach of doing something for the sake of art, tweak it to your heart's content. I mean, we've all seen where passion projects can go. Like, you know, Stardew Valley is the biggest passion project I can think of, from where it started from to where it is now. Massive improvements. It was never bad to start with, but like, holy crap, that's just like it's a trip on like what a single person can do with the amount of passion. Understand. If you're looking for a more day-to-day perspective of like that, you like to eat food and you like a roof over your head as a writer, like sometimes like perfect is the enemy of success, you know what I mean? Like sometimes you just have to set something out in the world, be like, you know what, I maybe rushed a section, or I didn't stick with it, or, you know, I could have done this. Do it on your next project. Like, I mean, it's not saying that like you can't be critical on like looking at your own work, but like it's kind of a sink or swim mentality. Like at some point you have to pull the trigger on it. At some point you have to look at what the next project is, because the next project is what's going to make you money. The amount of people that are going to, like, you know, you edit one section of a book or you edit a paragraph in a book, it's probably not going to make a difference. Like I was saying, if you want to go back and make spelling corrections, perfect, no problem. That's the easy. That's a low effort on your time. But if you're looking to refactor an entire book and do something like that, I just kind of question on like how valuable your time is on, and if that's actually going to make you money. You know what I mean? Like, sure, there's probably edge cases where that's something that can actually be done and is maybe useful. But for the regular author, like, no, just like, just start something new, scrap it. If you really need to, start a new pen name, move on to something new. Like it's, if you want to make a living on this and you're actually, if you also need to make a living on this, like looking forward to the next thing is honestly the most important thing you can do.
Yeah. And, I mean, I personally encourage people to finish things. And that means that you have to put in finish points. I did a mistake. I started like this whole like online persona on Maddox 3. So I'm kind of married to Torchbearer now, and I'm going to finish it, even though it's probably not going to sell. And I'm okay with that because I have a very good income. I have a very good job. I'm fine. But I have other ideas that I want to write, and I need like they're just sitting on the back burner and they're burning there, and I want to write them. I want to write them so much.
Yep.
So yeah, but that being said, as someone who did rewrite an entire friggin' book, like of 240,000 words twice, I learned a lot. I learned a lot about writing. I learned a lot about what not to do. But I could have done the same thing while writing the next book.
Yep.
Right. That being said, forcing myself to kind of read my own drivel actually was the thing that I personally needed in order to improve writing. So the books that that's online right now is a far cry from the book that I'm actually going to put out soon, hopefully. But we'll see. Anyway, the question was more geared towards like one thing that you learned that you change now, or that you're always looking out for now that you're writing new stuff.
For that, honestly, so I would say pacing. I feel that this is, I would say, more recent. How recent would it be? Maybe like hat trick ish or something like that. Mm-hmm. So like within the last like year and a bit or so, even slightly before I started writing Ascend and Line 4, is really having hard and fixed chapter lengths. A lot of people have said this before. I just didn't care or didn't really feel that it was important because I wrote what the story dictated. But I feel that picking a particular chapter length and making it as consistent as possible throughout every single chapter of your story is important. I feel that helps with the flow of the book. It keeps chapters from dragging. It gives you a very fixed window to play with in a particular chapter. And I have personally really started to like that. I've written now at least 5 books, I think, with 6 chapter lengths. Every single book has a different chapter length that I'm going for. But I feel that if you limit yourself, you know, only 3,500 words, you know, only 4,000 words, you know, only 2,500 words, that gives you a different way of structuring the chapter and just like looking at your own writing. So, I mean, I wish I'd kind of come to that much, much sooner, much sooner in my writing, because I feel like a lot of my books suffer from being maybe too long-winded, or just like the chapters just go on too long. They could have been structured and paced differently to just be more punching in some sense. I don't know. I mean, I think that's probably legitimately the biggest thing, because I've looked back at some of my writing and I have like a 10,000 word chapter and I'm like, oh my God, that's just like absolutely ridiculous, right? So,
It's not like you're writing log 3.16 for 30,000 words, which is one single fight scene.
Yeah.
But you should not do that. You should not.
No, that hurts.
Yeah. But I mean, like, I chunked that into like several, like I think at 18 parts in the second edit, in the first edit, and then in the second edit, I actually made it good. So yeah. But pacing is good.
Yep.
Learning that right now too.
Definitely.
Yeah. Also, maybe it's not a good idea to have like the first 4 chapters of your new book start by your main character basically playing The Sims. So you should probably do something with that.
Yeah.
It's very cozy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Fast start. So that's I always like that.
Yeah, I mean, like it's a web serial, so second book. We can talk about this in the bonus material. What's one book that you love and why is it awesome?
Sorry, say again?
What's one book that you love and why is it awesome?
Oh, that's a good question. What have I read recently that I really loved? I've said this a few times. Honestly, it took me a while to get into it, like in terms of like starting to read it, but Beware of Chicken. I knew it existed. It was always in the background. I was just never in the mood to read in general. Because I was spending so much time writing, I let my reading eventually kind of fall to the wayside. I mean, I would only read I started only reading like fiction stuff. I only started reading, nonfiction, just because I wanted just something grounded, like more grounded in term. But, Beware of Chicken eventually essentially got me back into reading, like in general. Like, I mean, I loved it. I loved the fact that it was started off as a satire. I loved that it was cozy. I loved that it was a slice of life. I just loved the slow and very down to earth pacing of it. And it just felt, it feels like a book where I can come home to. Like even now, like I wait every single, week or whatever for the new chapters to come out on Patreon. And it honestly feels like just being with friends. I mean, like that's like the best vibe that I personally needed out of a book. And it was just, that's exactly what I look for. I mean, I can't say. I mean, I know that might not be the same right book for everybody, but it was a perfect book for me. It's exactly what I needed, and I always go back to it whenever I need something to like unwind and relax to.
I'm not getting paid for this, and this is not like I. It seems kind of self-serving, but I'm still gonna say it. Friend of mine, Haylock, he's written Heretical Fishing, and if you need more more Beware of Chicken vibes in your life, Heretical Fishing is might just be what you need.
Have
you
read Lovely. It? Yeah, I've seen it. I haven't grabbed it yet, but yeah, I'll do that.
Yeah. The audiobook is very good. Heath Miller narrated it, and he had a blast doing it. And yeah, some people say like it's he who fights with monsters meets Beware of Chicken, but the only thing that's he who fights with monsters in there is like the narrator and maybe the Aussie accent.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, like there's no, the system is completely different. It's a completely normal cultivation thing.
Yep.
And it's really good. It has a cute crab and an otter.
Lovely. Yeah, I'll check it out.
Yeah, cool. All right, that being said, I think it's time for shoutouts.
Shoutouts. What do I have? I am loving Katie Hanna's library system. That was really good. I've seen that. Mm-hmm. She is publishing it soon, next month, I think July, early July.
Yes.
I think it'll be coming out. And then, I just generally recommend everything by Phil Tucker and Harmon Cooper. They have too much stuff because all they do is write all the time, nonstop. I don't know if they sleep or what they do otherwise, but I've never
Phil
been...
has a bed.
Right.
I've seen his bed.
Oh, he has a bed. Oh, okay. I thought I could have sworn he's just slept standing up. No, it's great. I love everything that they put out. I've never been disappointed with anything that they have. I mean, I've honestly, even past that, I've said my super fun things about Beware of Chicken. I am down for that. And I would say more recently, I've super enjoyed reading Speedrunning the Multiverse.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that. I picked it up just like out of nowhere, you know what I mean? And it was fantastic. I mean, I enjoyed it. I mean, you have to be in the mind for like that kind of book, but it was a feel good book. I enjoyed every single step of it. I thought it had some interesting things that it did. I'm super happy. I got to do a lot of catch up. I tend to binge read in months for months at a time, and I'm due to start again. So,
I definitely know that feel. Whenever I read, I kind of like assume the tone of whatever I'm reading. So I'm trying not to read too much. The fact that my characters played The Sims for like a couple of chapters is like, that's a lot of paragraph fishing in there. So I have to like read the entire chapter. Yeah. Well, I like reading a lot, but finding the time for it is really hard, especially if you're doing like four jobs at once.
Justifying what time you're spending on.
And sometimes I fall into that trap of like procrastinating on reading because it feels like I haven't earned it yet or something, right? So I'm procrastinating in other ways. So yeah, it's not good. Really got to be mindful of how you spend your time and not just, you know, like sit on the couch and watch like endless YouTube videos.
Well, we have a lot of, exciting things just to look forward to in general, right? I mean, that's been a really good year for actual games to play, actual video games to play. And, you know, the summer's starting, so people like either... that's not fair. I know a lot of people who start reading in the summer and they just go sit and get sunburned and then read. But then also, too, a lot of people are really busy during the summer, so it's one or the other, right? So,
yeah. I've actually had to uninstall most games. I play too much.
Oh yeah, keep yourself focused. Yeah,
yeah. No, like I have other shit to do, right? I got the podcast, I got the writing, I got the the other store, like the main job, right? Yep. So I have all the stuff that I like really want to do, and gaming gets in the way of that. That being said, I did spend a lot of time on this game with a horrible title, but really good gameplay. It's called Meta Ghost, the breaking game. It's really fun.
No, I haven't heard of that one, but yeah, is it? What do you do?
Cyberpunk Hades.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, Hades 2 is out, so you can just play that. But
right, I'm waiting.
Yeah,
I'm waiting. Hopefully, be out of early access soon. I don't want to spoil so on myself, because I'm going to lose like a week, if not more, so playing it as soon as it comes out. So I need to pick and choose my moments.
It's going to be a year or so. So
oh, that's fine.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to playing Final Fantasy VII Rebirth on something, because I've been avoiding the entire internet corner of the internet.
Yeah. I haven't caught up. Yeah,
I don't have a PS5.
Oh yeah, well, you'll need that. I mean, you can wait till it comes on the PC eventually, yeah. But yeah, I don't know.
Also, Square Enix broke up with Sony. They are now going to look into releasing their entire cadre across all platforms simultaneously, and no longer be PlayStation exclusive for like a year or two.
Nice. Well, I'm ready for that.
Me too. But even if it, especially if it means like better PC ports.
I mean, ideally, yeah. I mean, that's like I spent money on a gaming computer for a reason, right? So hopefully it'll pan out.
To edit podcasts?
That's right. That's right. Of course. Right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, with all the shoutouts and gaming talk done, I think that's the end of the YouTube part of the podcast.
Lovely.
I'm going to rub people off their joy. No. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening and watching. Luke, do you have any last words?
Last words. So I say, if you are interested in new stuff for me, I am going to be having the Kickstarter for the second edition of the Ascend Online comic book is going to be coming out in June. Right now, as of this time, we're planning on June 4th, that's not super set in stone, but it will be in June. So if you're interested in supporting us or just seeing what we're doing, that will be coming up soon. And then after that, I would say just stay tuned for Starbreaker. I'm going to be serializing that for free on my website and on Railroad and all your chosen serial platforms. So those will be the next two big things coming for me.
So all my serial platforms, even like my breakfast bowls?
Breakfast bowl, yeah. Sorry.
like, oh my God, like all these letters just form sentences.
Right.
Yeah, that being said, I might actually have to kind of slot you in a little bit earlier, because your slot right now is sometime in August. So
no worries. Yeah.
We'll see.
If it doesn't work.
So what do you got going in August?
I will hoping by August we'll have the actual release of Starbreaker and on Amazon.
Ooh,
so nice. We'll see. Yeah.
Looking for I'm really looking forward to that. I love Starfinder-esque settings. Like I really do.
Yeah, I hope it's fun. I hope it lands. It's been a blast to write.
I mean, it's sci-fi, so we all know the debuff on sci-fi. So
yeah,
but well, as a fellow sci-fi person,
I'm hoping it'll be a nice middle ground between fantasy and sci-fi. So we'll see. Yeah. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, like I think science fantasy nerds like ourselves should unite.
Yeah. We'll figure it out. Yeah, exactly, right? Well, I mean, like I say, Iron Front succeeded. So, I mean, there's clearly a middle ground that people will jump in and try something, right? So,
Iron Front?
Like for Iron Prince? So, for Stormweaver, right? So, we'll see how it works out. People seem to enjoy it. Just a little bit, right?
Yeah.
So, we'll see. We'll see. There's hope yet.
Absolutely. Well, with that being said, thank you everyone for listening and or watching. I hope you've been fire and song for this episode. I know. And if you want to support the podcast, please do consider following, liking, commenting, subscribing. It helps. And it allows me to do more of these. And also, because I don't get tired of saying it, you should go and check out Chat on Stats. They are on Facebook. They are on YouTube. They're a really cool show, too. And they have a different format than myself. So go and check them out. They have many guests that I didn't have yet. Like, for example, my eternal nemesis, Matt Dinneman, who doesn't know he's my eternal nemesis because he hasn't come to the show yet. So, yeah. Go and check him out. Thank you, everyone, for listening and watching. And I'll see you next time. And if you're on Patreon, the show goes on.